Köszöntöm nézőinket, szervusztok! Több adásban is foglalkoztunk már azzal, hogy Európa hogyan próbál reagálni a Trump korszak, illetve a multiporális világrend átalakulásának kihívásaira, illetve azokkal az általános válságokkal, amelyekkel a kontinens szembenéz, nem beszélve például az európai szélső jobboldal, amelynek tekintetében Orbán Viktor meghatározó vezetőnek számít, szóval az európai szélső jobboldal erősödésére. Franciaország mindkét jelenség megértése szempontjából kulcs ország, hiszen részben a tetrekészek koalíciójának vezetője és az európai stratégiai autonómia koncepciójának zászlóvivője is egyben. Másrészt azért egy olyan országról van szó, ahol a következő választások komoly esélyesét, a szélső jobboldali Marine Le Pen kizárták a következő elnökválasztáson való indulásból. Mindezekről, a francia-magyar kapcsolatokról és személyes szakmai életútjáról is kérdezem Franciaország budapesti nagykövetét, Jonathan Lacottot. Az interjú angol nyelven készül 2025. április 16-án. Ha még esetleg új lennél a csatorna számára, akkor egyrészt köszöntelek, és mindenképp iratkozz fel, hogy ne maradj le a további tartalmainkról. Illetve, ha megteheted, kérlek, hogy szállj be a finanszírozásunkba többek között például az adót 1%-ának a felajánlásával. Az ehhez szükséges információkat megtalálod a leírásban. Kezdünk. So, His Excellence Jonathan Lacott, Ambassador of the Republic of France to Hungary. Welcome to the show. Let's start with a little personal introduction, because you have served in many countries as a diplomat, but your educational background is in Hungarian and Estonian. How does a French student pick these languages to study?
Well, these are some of the languages that I picked up, but the starting point is the year 1989, the year when everything changed in Europe. And as a teenager, I was very much interested by what was going on in this region after the fall of the Berlin Wall, the collapse of the Iron Curtain. And this led me to be interested in the region, and more particularly in Hungary.
How old were you back at that time?
In 89, I was 17.
Oh.
So that's why I said a teenager. So then later on, as a student, I picked up political science, but also decided to learn foreign languages. And having been a trainee in the embassy in Budapest in 1993, I decided to invest on Hungarian, among others, because I also learned other languages. So I'm very happy to be back 32 years later, and glad to see that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of France took into account this ancient knowledge of Hungarian in my posting in this country.
Your first diplomatic duties were in Serbia and in Montenegro during the years of the post-Milosevic democratic transition, including the arrest of the former leader, Slobodan Milosevic. What are your recollections from that time?
I've always been interested by these parts of Europe, which are a bit in transition. And this was the case of the Balkans in the early 2000s. And it was really stimulating to be in Serbia, in what was then still called Yugoslavia, at a moment when France was re-engaging with this country and trying to help this country be back on the mainstream track towards the European Union. 20 years later, we are still on this track, and France is still very supportive of the accession of Balkans to the European Union. And I would say I also had the same impression when being posted in Armenia, in the Caucasus, which is also a part of wider Europe, still very much in transition.
How do you recall the assassination of the democratically elected Serbian Prime Minister Zoran Đinđić back in 2003?
2003, indeed. No, I keep very vivid memory of this tragedy. And I think
you were in Belgrade.
I was in Belgrade when it happened, and I do remember the impact on the population. And it was a real turning point in the new democratic Serbia. All the energy, all the optimism, which was in the air at that time, and not specifically connected to the sole personality of Đinđić, suddenly seemed to have vanished. And it looks like ever since Serbia has entered a long tunnel, where there is some light at the end, which we hope will be the accession to the European Union.
Have you ever met with Đinđić personally?
I have met with Đinđić personally, yes, of course.
What kind of, memories or impressions do you have about him?
He was truly committed to the reform of Serbia, truly committed to bringing his country closer to the European Union, and truly committed to break from the past. Mm. And I think this is the price he paid for this very courageous steps he was making.
Your most recent service before Hungary was in Armenia during the eruption of the second Nagorno-Karabakh war, where Azerbaijan set out to take over the disputed region. We do not have time to go into all the details of the war, but I'm interested of the so-called French neutrality and in the cooperation with Russia in mediating the conflict. So my question is, that France's position has long been neutral in that conflict. But you also told a news conference in 2017 that, quote, the conflict does not have a military solution, end of quote. How did you reconcile this after Azerbaijan's 2020 attack and with the reported ethnic cleansing they were conducting there?
Well, the fact is that there hasn't been a military solution. There was a military action which led to the people of Karabakh leaving this region, and I wouldn't call this ultimately a solution. But the conclusions I draw from having been direct witness of this conflict is that now we are in the world where the use of force has become the new normal. And many characteristics which were observed during this conflict, we have them, of course, at a much larger scale in the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And many conclusions should have been drawn from this conflict in 2020, and maybe the conclusions we did not draw at that time were closely looked upon in Moscow, which might have drawn its own conclusions when deciding to invade Ukraine in 2022.
Both France and Russia was partners in the OSCE Minsk group, which was trying to mediate between the two parties. How would you describe that experience?
It's an interesting diplomatic experience. Three countries, Russia, the United States, and France, had a role of mediation. And this was to find a pacific solution to the conflict. But then one of the parties decided to use force to settle it once for all. I think retrospectively, what we must look at is that we thought we had three mediators and two parties to the conflict. Mm-hmm. Actually, we had three mediators and three parties to the conflict.
And at the time, reports suggested that the ceasefire was ultimately brokered by Russia and France was sidelined. What is your comment on that?
The reality is that only Russia had means to intervene on the ground. There was no ambiguity about that. But if we had thought at that time that it was peacekeeping, we saw 3 years later that Russia was actually defending its own interests and they didn't very much intervene when the final chapter of the conflict happened in 2023.
And did you gain any insight into Russian diplomacy or Russia's influence in post-Soviet republics that we should remember when we're dealing with Ukraine?
Absolutely. I think we should have no doubt on the fact that Russia is having a very offensive, if not aggressive, attitude vis-a-vis a great number of its neighbors and former republics of the Soviet Union. So we have the situation we have in Ukraine, where it is a blatant case of military invasion. But Russia also used other means in other parts of its neighborhood. And obviously, currently in the Caucasus, is developing a very active, if not aggressive, attitude vis-a-vis the countries of the region.
Okay, speaking of the war in Ukraine, it is clear that the Hungarian government is taking a markedly different stance than your country. At the same time, President Macron is still engaged in talks with Prime Minister Viktor Orban. Their last one-on-one meeting was in March this year. How do you, assess their dynamics?
Well, we do take into account that everybody is not exactly on the same line within the European Union. And in this case, the attitude of France is to speak with all our partners. So indeed, not only has President Macron received Viktor Orban in Paris in March, but he also received him 3 months earlier and even earlier during last year. So they actually meet on a very regular basis. And I think this is necessary precisely to mention the case of Ukraine and the issues which are related to that. France has a very firm stand, which is support to Ukraine as long as Ukraine is victim of the aggression of Russia. We would very much like to join the so-called camp of peace, and who is not in favor of peace, to start by the Ukrainian people. But now we are in a very concrete situation. A proposal has been made by Donald Trump almost a month ago. This has been accepted by Ukraine, and we have what we have, which means almost daily bombings of Russia on Ukraine, including on civilian populations.
Do you have any comment on the legally non-binding vote the government is currently organizing against any future EU accession of Ukraine?
The reality is that we committed ourselves to the accession of Ukraine to the European Union in the context of the conflict. Before the conflict had started...
By we, you mean France or the entire European Union?
The entire European Union, because some decisions have been made by unanimity when it came to acknowledge the application of Ukraine and to open the negotiations. So it was a response to the situation Ukraine was in. For the longer term, it's not only about the accession of Ukraine to the European Union, it's the capacity of Ukraine to preserve its sovereignty and independence, whatever settlement may be found after some negotiations. So it's also about security guarantees we would be willing to bring to Ukraine to help this country preserve its security after what it has gone through in the recent years.
France leads the coalition of the willing jointly with Britain, and they created it in the aftermath of the meeting between President Zelensky and President Trump in the White House. Hungary was not invited to join to this coalition of the willing. Instead, Orban is accusing the coalition of having no plan other than arming Ukraine until it achieves full victory. How do you respond to this?
It is indeed a coalition of the willing and of the capable, which unites those countries who are willing to provide assistance, and notably military assistance, to Ukraine. So anybody willing to bring this kind of assistance to Ukraine would be welcome to the meeting. The fact is that even in this context, we have not lost contact with Hungary, because the latest meeting between President Macron and Prime Minister Orban precisely took place in the immediate aftermath of one of these meetings.
But you can confirm that Hungary didn't get an official invitation to this meeting?
Nor did Hungary ask actually to participate in the meeting. But the fact is, Hungary has expressed the will to maintain close contact and communication with France.
And what are the pre-requirements on the side of Hungary to be accepted to these meetings?
The fact is that there is no negotiation going on to be in or out of this group. This group has its own dynamics. There was also a meeting of the chief of staff of the military of the European countries, and the Hungarian chief of staff, General Burundi, actually took part in this meeting. So I would see less dichotomy in this issue, as sometimes we seem to think there is, between Hungary and the other countries of the European Union and of NATO. Hungary has its position, but we are in very close contact between Paris and Budapest.
So as far as I understand, you can confirm that Prime Minister Orban is happy with his current position not to be included into this coalition.
The fact is, I didn't receive any request to take part in these meetings.
Okay. And what does it mean to send reassurance forces to Ukraine after the end of the war? Does it not confirm Orban's warnings that if Hungary joined the pro-Ukraine coalition, it would have to send troops to Ukraine?
In any case, we would not be sending troops to be at war against Russia. We would be sending troops to guarantee the security, the independence, and the sovereignty of Ukraine. So any deployment would only take place in a peace context, in a settlement of the war in Ukraine. We are very far from that. But what President Macron has always said is that we must not show in advance to Russia what our red lines would be. So this is why at a very early stage, more than 1 year now, France has made very clear that sending troops is not excluded in the various options we would be ready to deploy vis-a-vis Ukraine.
And one last question related to the coalition. How do you respond to the framing that the coalition was created outside of the EU framework, specifically to prevent Prime Minister Orban and Prime Minister Robert Fico from intervening?
No, the fact is that it was really an ad hoc coalition. And actually, many countries were not invited at the very first meeting, even some who would have been willing to take part. And then we adopted a very open format, including many non-members of the European Union, to start by the United Kingdom, but also other partners like Canada, Norway, and other countries of the wider Europe. So this format is very flexible as such.
Okay. The Coalition of the Willing and the new Rearm Europe, or Readiness 2030, plan represent a new era where Europe aims for strategic autonomy, something President Macron has championed even prior to the election of President Trump. But would you say that other nations in Europe realized this strategic necessity too late?
The fact is, everybody didn't recognize the necessity of strategic autonomy at the same time. And from this point of view, we must say that Hungary was one of the countries of the European Union who acknowledged the situation maybe earlier than others. And this has always been a strong point of convergence between France and Hungary. But indeed, for other member states, the wake-up call can be very harsh, because we are far from strategic autonomy. So this is why we need, first of all, to strengthen our decision-making, to strengthen our capacities, to reduce our dependencies from external actors, and to beef up the capacities of the European Union to reinforce their armament and capabilities in a very uncertain context. President Macron has spoken of an existential risk for the European Union in an interview to The Economist several years ago. This interview was a bit of a surprise for many readers. And now we have a very clear picture with, on one side of the European continent, a Russia which is more and more assertive and aggressive, and on the other side of the Atlantic, United States, which are telling us that they want to reduce their presence on the European continent. And this is not specifically connected to the election of Donald Trump. It's been a long trend in the US diplomacy to reduce its presence in Europe and to call on European unions to take their responsibilities when it comes to defense.
You have mentioned convergence between France and Hungary regarding European sovereignty. Would you expand on this a little bit more?
Well, I think every European nation is attached to the concept of sovereignty. But when we come to implement it, I think that both France and Hungary are countries which acknowledge the need for a strong defense. And indeed, Hungary is one of the allies which does spend 2% of its GDP on defense. Hungary, like France, also has a defense industry on its territory. We may not have the same analysis of the situation of Ukraine, but we do assess the need for the European countries to have a stronger commitment when it comes to defense and to capabilities.
Do you honestly think that it's still a feasible goal to make Europe great again, to put Europe on a different level in this multipolar world order?
Well, it's a wake-up call now, and decisions have to be made now, because the existence of the European Union as such depend on the decisions which will be made in the coming years. So we have mentioned defense, which of course will be key, because if the European Union is not in a situation to defend itself, it will find itself in a very critical situation. But it's also strengthening the competitivity of our economies, and to be at the front of the innovation when it comes to artificial intelligence or other strategic industries, and also, widely speaking, necessity to reduce our dependencies from other players, which might not always be as close to us as we thought. And here we have another chapter of convergence between France and Hungary, which is energy, because both France and Hungary, with, of course, other partners in the European Union, have made a very firm choice in favor of development of nuclear energy. France and Hungary are among the countries who have currently nuclear power plants under construction on their territories. And this is indeed a strong field of cooperation between our two countries.
In regards to this last sentence of yours, it was reported by Direct 36 in 2024 that the government considered the construction of a new nuclear power plant with the involvement of the French company Framatome.
Yes, and others.
Were you aware of such plans, or do you have any comments? So this is still going on?
I must say, this is one of the strongest chapters of cooperation between our two countries, and definitely followed very closely by the embassy. And since I have arrived, I have met all the actors of this sector, be they French or be they Hungarian. And we are actually very proud to be a partner of Hungary on every segment of the nuclear cycle. On providing the fuel, Framatome has signed in November a contract with Hungary for providing of European fuel in replacement of that which is currently coming from Russia. Framatome is involved in the construction of Paks-2, and we also signed last week an agreement between French and Hungarian authorities for the management of nuclear waste, and I even visited Bata Opati deposit. So we are present on every segment of the nuclear cycle. So it's absolutely key for us to be present in this sector, which is important for the sovereignty of both our countries.
Can you name what Hungarian companies are involved on the Hungarian side into the process?
Those who are in charge of the construction of Paks-2 and the public authorities in charge of safety and of management of nuclear waste, and all under the supervision of the Ministry of Energy. So during my first months in Hungary, this is a chapter on which I have been very active, very willing to meet all the actors of the sector. The only chapter missing is a visit of Paks itself, which I will do in the very following weeks.
The level of corruption in Hungary is reported by all, I don't know, the relevant NGOs and free media outlets. Don't you think that's a kind of a threat on the feasibility of the project?
Well, if we want to develop a project as important as nuclear energy, we need to be in a very safe, legal, economic and security environment. So I guess that French companies would radically change stance if they didn't have all the necessary guarantees in this field.
You mentioned in this conversation, and you mentioned it before in other conversation, when it comes to Franco-Hungarian relations, that how important the economic ties between the two countries. And France is the fifth largest foreign investor in Hungary, where the corporate tax rate is a mere 9%. And Orbán has rolled back workers' rights repeatedly, actually just this week as well. But at the same time, his allies have displaced foreign investors in some sectors, and his economic policy was criticized as unpredictable by the German-Hungarian Chamber of Commerce, among others. Overall, do you view the Hungarian government as a reliable partner for French investment?
So as you mentioned, yes, we are the fifth investor. We have more than 500 French companies present in the country. They employ 50,000 people. And these French companies have become de facto Hungarian because the management very often is Hungarian too. So they are deeply rooted in the economic realities of this country. So from this point of view, for me as ambassador, following the activities of our companies does give me a very strong insight on the functioning of the Hungarian economy. And some indeed do have difficulties, and some may have issues with the government.
What kind of difficulties?
When it comes to taxation, when it comes to rules of the free market, when it comes to property rights, so very specific issues which can pop up. And we had the opportunity to talk about this to the Hungarian authorities, and wherever needed, the Hungarian authorities say, okay, we will be ready to meet with these companies, to set up working groups, and several of them, I won't name the companies because it's up to them to communicate on these issues, several of them are actually taking place.
But do you get warning signs or reports from any French investors who are facing, I don't know, the threat of corruption or other kind of state interference in their business?
The fact is that French embassies traditionally do follow very closely the activities of companies, even though these are private actors. And wherever these private actors, these French companies, want the French embassy to send a message to the Hungarian government, and we do the same in other countries, we absolutely do it.
And you have? You had to?
We have ongoing cases, and as long as contact is established between these companies and the government, we are following very closely.
Those investors, those companies who were present in this country prior to 2010, so those who had experience of the previous government 15 years ago. So those companies report to you or to the embassy an emerging level of threats of corruption, or do they say that the level of corruption is on the same level as it was prior to 2010, before Orbán came first into government with the two-third majority?
The fact is that these companies haven't been into historic comparisons. To be honest, most of them are happy with the level of their activity, the huge majority of these 500 companies. Then we are in contact with a limited number of companies who are willing either to inform us of ongoing developments or an even smaller number asking us to intervene vis-a-vis the government.
I'm asking this because French investment was and still present in key sectors like energy, advertising, where Orbán-friendly businessmen or even oligarchs absolutely are their direct competitors. And so I have to ask very directly, are you aware of any attempts by them, I mean the Orbán-friendly businessmen, to either displace, purchase with force, or otherwise influence these French companies?
The fact, things have happened in the past and I wasn't there, but one thing we are paying a great attention to now, at least me as ambassador, is that no French company actually leaves Hungary. Of course, my ambition would be to see more French companies being present in Hungary, which is not happening. But if one French company were to leave the country, I think that would send a very negative message to the whole business community in Paris, which is a very centralized business community. And I think everybody in Hungary is aware of this.
President Macron not just met with Viktor Orbán, but also he met with Peter Magyar, the leader of the biggest Hungarian opposition party right now, when he was here in last November. What were the goals with that meeting? on the French side, and what conclusions did you draw from that meeting?
Well, this is very common practice that when the French president travels abroad, he also meets opposition leaders. And I think this is also a practice shared by the Hungarian authorities, at least when they visit France, because my knowledge is that Prime Minister Orban also visits leaders of the French opposition. I think it's something perfectly...
Or previous leaders of the French opposition.
I think it's something perfectly normal within the European Union. And this was the first meeting between President Macron and Magyar Péter. And I think they both were willing to meet, to have this first meeting, to meet each other and to exchange points of view. And if there was something to conclude, it's just a proximity between the way their respective political parties have emerged, although in very different contexts, one in 2017 and the other one in the current situation.
So it's a standard diplomatic routine, because it was accused by pro-government media outlets that President Macron is sending a kind of, message to the Hungarian opposition or trying to embrace them or empower them in that way.
I once heard President Macron say, "We do not choose the leaders of the others." And I think this is something fundamental when it comes to respect of democracy. We are in charge of our own countries. We do not choose the leaders of other countries. And when they are elected, we work with whoever has won the elections.
You've mentioned Marine Le Pen briefly previously, and I would like to ask you about the relationship between our Prime Minister and Marine Le Pen. Because Orban Viktor was one of the first world leaders who expressed his solidarity towards Marine Le Pen after her disqualification for the next presidential election. Do you have any comments on that?
By definition, diplomats do not comment, but I can explain. This is a very interesting case of functioning of the rule of law. The fact is that in France, nobody, and especially not politicians, are above the law, especially when it comes to the respect of criminal law. And breaching criminal law often leads to being sentenced to criminal sentences. And in this case, the fact is that the French law does include ineligibility as a possible sanctions for elected people. So it's really pure application of the law, and you can't expect much more from a judge than to apply the law which has previously been adopted by the parliament. So comments have been made here and elsewhere. We could consider that comments could be an interference in internal affairs, after all. But in this case, it has been an application of the functioning of the rule of law in France.
Yes, but what would you say to those who are saying that regardless of the legal basis, such an attempt can harm the democratic, I don't know, nature, the democratic culture in France?
Well, when the French Parliament adopted laws which specifically contain provisions which foresee ineligibility as a possible sanctions, it means that at the end, judges are in a position to declare such or such political figure as non-competent to run for an election. Now, if the French legislator now considers that this is not suitable, it's really up to the French legislator and to the French legislator alone to change the law.
Yeah, but others are worrying about that. For example, autocrats like Orban can dismiss criticism against their authoritarian activities or authoritarian policies, and or even use it as a kind of a precedent to disqualify their opponents. What is your comment on that?
Well, in the case of France, it was a pure legal and judicial decision with no political background, and I really don't see through which channel the executive power would have held the hand of the judge. So if something similar were to happen anywhere else, I think it would be very exaggerated to use the French precedent as a justification of a politically motivated action against such or such politician.
Are you concerned about those reports which said that Marine Le Pen received 10.7 million euros for her last campaign from Hungarian bank called MKB, a bank with very close ties to Prime Minister Orban?
So this maybe explains the difficulties such or such French political party can be in. The fact is that the French rules when it comes to financing of political parties and political campaigns are very strict and, as we have seen, with very strong sanctions. So if a French political party is envisaging financing from abroad, it's entering very uncharted waters.
Okay. And my final question, last year, you and your embassy joined with the other embassies endorsing the Budapest Pride Festival. Do you plan to endorse this event in this year, or do you even plan to attend on the march if that's going to happen, despite the fact that it is doesn't have a legal mandate?
Well, the fact is that it seems that never the Pride in Budapest has seemed so popular as it is seems to be this year. The Pride was a non-subject until 7 weeks ago, and now the Pride is at the center of the attention. What I anticipate is that many people, many personalities, will come from France on June the 28th, whatever happens in the streets of Budapest. So, as an ambassador, my first duty is to prepare for these numerous visits, which I know will happen on this date. Beyond the Pride, what we have been looking at here in Budapest, and it's not about embassies, it's also about our capitals, because ambassadors don't express themselves, they express the position of their country, is the legal basis of a restrictions of the right of gathering. This is what it is mainly about. We belong to the same European Union, we have adopted the same rules, and we look together how we implement these rules. So the statement which was made a month ago by 22 embassies expressing the views of 22 capitals is that of the right of gathering.
Does the ban of the Budapest Pride Festival or the Budapest Pride March concern France deeply?
Many political figures in France are looking at this very closely and are actually very willing to come, and some of them have already announced that they would be coming.
And because we still have, five more minutes till the end of our agreed time frame, I would like to ask you some questions regarding to our foreign minister, Peter Szijjártó. How would you describe your professional relationship with him?
I would say we have an almost everyday contact with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Hungary, precisely because France has made this choice at the highest level to maintain a strong political contact with this country. Peter Szijjártó travels very regularly to France. Interestingly, he's also in charge of trade, which gives also material for discussions in our bilateral contacts. And Hungary has the diplomacy it has the position it has on issues, especially like Ukraine. And when we are among partners and we have divergences, we consider that our first duty is to talk.
You mentioned that he took visits to France, but I think he does that more frequently towards Russia. And it was reported also by Direct 36 and other media outlets that European nations and NATO member countries are deeply concerned about the espionage activities of Russia on Hungarian soil, because it also has an effect on the national sovereignty of, for example, on France. Do you have any comment on that report?
About this report in particular, no, but generally speaking, of course, we do follow the pattern of relation Hungary has with the rest of the world, which is a very specific pattern. But we do insist on the fact that there is an obligation of loyalty when it comes to members of the European Union to follow at least the decisions we have taken together. And from this point of view, if, for instance, we want to mention the sanctions vis-a-vis Russia, yeah, because you mentioned this country, we have already adopted together by unanimity, 16 packages of sanctions. So we do expect every member state which have subscribed to these sanctions to apply them effectively and concretely.
Yeah, but I was more interested about the bilateral cooperation within NATO, because it was also reported that many important NATO countries are withholding information from Hungary because they don't trust that they can keep them in secret. Does or did France have to change their position when it comes to intelligence or, I don't know, information gathering with Hungary?
We don't have any specific protocol when it comes to Hungary, which is an ally within NATO, which is a partner within the European Union. And as I mentioned, over that, we do have this very strong political contact at the highest level.
So you can say with confidence that Hungary just as a trusted partner as any other NATO member country.
But we take into account the relations Hungary does have with other partners, of course.
Which mean, what is that meaning?
It means that if we are to mention issues like Ukraine or Russia or what, or any other with Hungary, we will take into account what the Hungarian position is.
Okay. Ambassador Lakat, thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for this interview.
Én is nagyon köszönöm.
Ez volt az interjú Franciaország Budapesti nagykövetével, Zsonátán Lakattal. Ha tetszett az interjú, kérdés iratkozz föl, illetve ha megteheted, akkor kérlek, szállj be a finanszírozásunkba az adót 1%-ának a felajánlásával, hogy ezt hogy teheted meg, azt pontosan megmutatjuk neked a leírásban található linken keresztül. Ha pedig érdekel a világpolitika, akkor mindenképpen ajánlom a Birodalom már publikált második részét, amelyben Papp Szilárd, Feledi Botond és Kernel Zsolt ültek össze másodjára, és így fognak tenni mostantól két hetenként, szóval érdemes követni azt a formátumot is, ha szeretnél képben lenni a külpolitika történéseivel. Köszönöm szépen a figyelmet, munkatársunk nevében is, hamarosan találkozunk, addig is ciao.